Good afternoon, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Wednesday, September 16th. I'm your reader, Bob. On the front page, we see that the Courier is predicting hazy sunshine with a high of 80 and a low of 47 tonight. Articles on the front page are less than 5 virus cases reported at Cedar Falls schools, mayor addresses state of the city, a new order in the courts, and we'll begin with Black Hawk County bars reopen. Bars in Black Hawk County can reopen at 5 p.m. Wednesday, governor says, filed by Rob Bossart of the Courier's Des Moines Bureau. And the story opens with a photograph of the outside and business sign of the Octopus College Hill in Cedar Falls, and it was among 50 Black Hawk County businesses receiving small business relief grants related to the COVID-19 health emergency. Des Moines. Governor Kim Reynolds will allow bars to reopen in Black Hawk, Dallas, Linn, and Polk counties at 5 p.m. on Wednesday. Her closure order remains in place in Johnson and Story counties, two college communities that have seen spikes in positive coronavirus cases among young people. Reynolds' new proclamation permits bars, taverns, wineries, breweries, distilleries, nightclubs, country clubs, or other social or fraternal clubs, including a wedding reception venue, to reopen in the 4 designated counties. It also removes restrictions on hours alcohol may be sold in restaurants. The order also clarifies social distancing requirements for bars and restaurants throughout the state. Bars will stay closed in Johnson and Story counties until September 20, but they may continue to sell alcoholic beverages to go. Restaurants in those two counties are still open, but must stop selling alcohol beverages after 10 p.m. Reynolds continues to strongly encourage, but not require, all Iowans 2 years old or older to wear a mask or other face covering in public settings, especially when it's not possible to remain 6 feet away from others outside their household, unless it's unsafe to do so because of health or disability. Other adjusted public health measures remain in effect until September 20, unless she extends the public health disaster emergency. She closed bars in the 6 affected counties last month amid a rise in cases of COVID-19, especially among young people ages 19 to 24, most notably in college towns where the resumption of fall semester classes was accompanied by crowds of students at bars showing little regard for masks or social distancing. Reynolds said counties with higher rates of COVID-19 made progress last week in controlling the spread, but she will continue monitoring the trends. The governor also implemented a $5 million state program offering one-time $10,000 grants to eligible bars and taverns negatively impacted by her closure order. A group of bar owners in Polk and Dallas counties previously sued Reynolds, arguing the governor was unfairly targeting their industry and had given them just a few hours' notice to shut down, adding to the financial strain their businesses suffered from closures ordered after the coronavirus pandemic hit Iowa on March 8th. But a district judge declined to issue a temporary injunction that would have allowed the bars to reopen. He did allow the business owners to go to trial and argue the order is unconstitutional. Next, less than 5 virus cases reported at Cedar Falls schools, filed by Andrew Wind, Cedar Falls. Cedar Falls Community Schools is apparently dealing with a very limited number of positive COVID-19 cases at the start of the 4th week of classes. While the district is not publicly releasing those statistics, a spokeswoman did give some insight into the current number of cases during Monday's Board of Education meeting. Janelle Darst, director of the Communications and Community Relations, addressed the online dashboards some area schools, districts, and higher education institutes used to make that information public. Quote, "We have less than 5 cases in the district," she told the board. "And when you say that, it's pretty easy to determine possibly who that person is." Quote, "So we've had lots of challenges of trying to be transparent and share information with people, but also we want to try to protect people's privacy," Darst added. Quote, it's a real difficult balance for us, unquote. Superintendent Andy Pate noted rumors get started when someone isn't in school, but many of those cases are due to symptoms that may or may not be associated with the coronavirus. Students are sent home even if they have low-risk symptoms, likely unrelated to the disease. He added that not releasing the statistics is in line with Blackhawk County Health Department's recommendation. Quote, until they get the guidance from the Iowa Public Department of Health in writing that says what can be shared and what should be shared, they're recommending districts not release that, at least in Blackhawk County, said Pate. Mayor addresses state of the city. And the story opens with a photograph of Waterloo Mayor Quentin Hart sitting at a desk and delivering a virtual State of the City address on Tuesday. Waterloo. Mayor Quentin Hart and top city officials highlighted economic development, police reform, and the possibility of a city-owned telecommunications utility in a virtual State of the City address on Tuesday. The address focused on initiatives from the fiscal year that ended June 30th. Former local journalist Kathy Flynn co-hosted interviewing Community Development Director Noelle Anderson, Public Works Director Randy Bennett, and Leisure Services Director Paul Hunting. Hart led conversations with other local leaders. Hart said city's economic performance hit its second highest mark on record based on permit values for residential, commercial, and industrial construction. Anderson said new permit valuation reached $161 million, surpassing the $100 million goal for the year. The city's highest permit valuation on record was $180 million in 2007, when the Isle Casino Hotel Waterloo broke ground. Quote, even in a COVID year, when we saw our business pressed and challenged, we had our community move forward, Hart said. Anderson cited one $15.7 million permit for Lost Island Theme Park, a 90-acre amusement park slated to open in 2022. The $100 million development is located across from the Lost Island Water Park on Shawless Road. The planning director said about $20 million in investments went toward the Five Sullivan Brothers Convention Center and adjacent hotel. The former Ramonda Hotel underwent a $4 million facelift to become a dual-branded Best Western Plus and Executive Residency Hotel. Work on the Convention Center continues and will include remodeling the lobby in the coming year. The city is continuing a construction training partnership with Hawkeye Community College, which builds new homes on vacant lots while training local students in construction work. The first two homes were chosen to be built on the city's east side. Quote, growth in our community is great when it happens, but we can never forget about the neighborhoods that need some support and growth as well, Hart said. Quote, we must see growth in every sector of the community, unquote. Hart said he estimates more than 45 new businesses opened in downtown Waterloo in the past couple of years. Hutting expressed excitement about Riverside State Skate Park, a $359,000 project near Joe Straub Memorial Field at Park Road and Fairview Avenue. The new location will be safe from Cedar River flooding that destroyed a previous skate park in September 2016. Waterloo Police Chief Joel Fitzgerald said the department instituted new policies in response to recent calls for reform. Officers will focus more on neighborhood policing, quality responses to resident calls, implicit bias training, and use of force adjustments, among other policies. Quote, you've seen me step out and expose myself to citizens within the community. Without throngs of police officers around me, actively listening and participating in conversations that are difficult, Fitzgerald said. And that's the expectation, I think, that they want from the mayor and from me and the public safety in general here in the city of Waterloo, unquote. Andy Van Fleet, partner for tech company Visual Logic, with an office in Waterloo, shared his optimism about prospects for a city-owned telecommunications company to provide internet service to residents. He said the city's telecommunications board is close to implementing the plan, which would allow for 1 to 10 gigabyte internet connectivity to residents and businesses for a lower price than offered by current providers. Quote, this would mean that you're going to get speeds of 10 to 100 times faster than what we're currently seeing, Van Fleek said. City Council members voted in February to approve an $84,500 study to explore a city-owned fiber optic system for internet, phone, and cable TV options. Other area internet providers include Mediacom Communications and CenturyLink. Quote, we know that there is demand for this, and we know that the citizens of Waterloo deserve better than what we have been providing recently, Van Fleet said. Hart and philanthropy advocate Sharina Salas said they are continuing to create pathways for people from historically marginalized groups to succeed in Waterloo. Hart said he is encouraged to see a rise in young Black and minority professionals in key leadership positions. Quote, it was not that long ago that people were trying to leave, Salas said. What's happening is people are creating their own spaces, their own avenues. They're not waiting to be tapped to showcase that they are leaders. They are leading and demonstrating in their own gifts and talents, unquote. A new order in courts. Jury duty looks different as trials resume in Black Hawk County courts. Filed by Jeff Reinitz. Waterloo. Residents called for jury duty are leaving Black Hawk County Courthouse with a souvenir, a clear plastic face shield. And the story opens with a photograph of a stack of face shields on a table. Court officials wearing rubber gloves handed out the transparent piece of personal protective equipment to potential jurors who showed up Tuesday as the county prepared for its first criminal jury trial since the coronavirus pandemic shuttered government offices in March. Noticeably missing from the jury selection experience are the clogged parking lot lines in the check-in counter and packed courtrooms. Quote, it's very much geared toward the jurors, said Arnell Ernst, the county's clerk of court. Instead, voir dire, the examination of prospective jurors by prosecutors and defense attorneys, was done in shifts of about 2.5 hours apart. People were scheduled to arrive at the courthouse 15 at a time. Following the question and answer session, court workers wiped down the benches in preparation for the next group of 15. People in the jury pool are in the courthouse for a shorter period of time than pre-COVID jury selection. Quote, you go home for the day, and at the end of the day, we let you know if you are actually selected, Ernst said. Those chosen to serve on the jury will be notified by phone, text, or email. Even those who aren't chosen can keep the face mask. There will be more differences once the trial starts. The jury box will remain empty, and jurors will be socially distant when seating in the front rows of the gallery. We won't be able to, with the 12 seats, actually seat them all there in the jury box. Being seated in the gallery is going to allow them to be able to keep the 6-foot distance, Ernst said. Spectators will be seated in the gallery's back rows. Attorneys, judges, and witnesses will join jurors in wearing face masks. Court officials said the clear plastic shield makes it easier to convey facial expressions and helps the court transcriptionist following the statements. Ernst said improvements have been made to the courtroom microphones and sound system. Quote, I think sound is the biggest concern we have, making sure everybody can hear everybody, she said. Sidebars, in which the jury normally is sent out while the attorneys and judge argue points of law, will be conducted in a side room. The jury will remain in the courtroom. During deliberations, the courtroom will become the jury room, with everyone else cleared from the room until panelists reach a verdict. Afterward, participants can fill out a survey to provide feedback to the process. Most of the changes come from a batch of pilot trials held in different counties across the state in August. Let's turn to the Cedar Valley section. The first article on that page is Cedar Falls Contracts Lay Foundation for High School Construction. And it opens with an artist's conception of what the new high school would look like, including multiple buildings and a track and field. Cedar Falls. Two contracts for a new high school were approved Monday by the Board of Education, but they're not for actual construction of the school. Rather, the district is hiring firms to commission the school's ventilation systems and the building's exterior envelope. Their job will be to test a battery of items that are part of the two areas to ensure everything performs correctly. They will also be tasked with proper training of school staff to operate and care for those items upon completion. A $150,000 contract was approved with System Works of West Des Moines for the HVAC systems commissioning, the lowest of the five bids for the service. High bid on the project was $193,750. A $106,845 contract was approved with Resource Building Envelope Specialists of Pierre City, Missouri. That was the lowest of two bids on the project, with the other one coming in at $177,000. Quote, this was part of the overall project and cost estimate, said Superintendent Andy Petit. The school, to be located on 69.6 acres of land north of West 27th Street and west of PE Center Drive, has an estimated budget of $112.9 million. It will total 305,000 square feet in two connected buildings. He noted the reason for the commissioning service, quote, goes back to the sophistication of the building. There are so many dynamics in this large of a scope, unquote. This will be the first time the district has used such a service in a construction project. The HVAC contract goes into all lab and field testing to make sure that everything is running at the utmost efficiency and the level that is intended, said Petit. It will ensure, quote, that all the electrical and lighting systems are functioning appropriately and everything is site tested, unquote. Additionally, the gas, hot water, and fire protection systems will be tested. The building envelope contract includes site testing and evaluation of all the windows and making sure that all the roof systems and exterior doors and joints are properly installed and waterproofed, said Petit. All concrete slabs and subfloor will be inspected as part of that. Quote, why can't Story Construction do this? Asked board member Jeff Hassman, referring to the construction manager hired for the project a year ago. Quote, they oversee the project when it comes to meeting the specifications, but not all the field testing components, said Petit. Quote, this makes sure that things are addressed on the spot and at the time that they need to be addressed, unquote. On a related matter, officials announced that the class of 1970 made a $53,775 donation to the Cedar Falls School Foundation for the construction of the new high school building. Quote, we'll be embarking on a big naming rights campaign and some fundraising starting out quite soon for the high school, said Janelle Darst, a district spokeswoman. Quote, that's a really good way for us to kick off this process, unquote. Election expenses defrayed by grant. County gets $267,500 for polls in November, filed by Sydney Sizen. Waterloo. Blackhawk County has been awarded a $267,500 grant from a nonprofit organization for costs related to November's general election. Grant Feeder, election commissioner and county auditor, learned Monday that the county was awarded the full amount on its application. He announced the grant Tuesday to the Board of Supervisors, who must approve the agreement. Quote, I was surprised, Veeder said. I heard that this organization was very keen to get money out to local jurisdictions to help with this election in difficult times, but I really didn't expect that large of an award. Veeder expects to use the money to pay more part-time staff to help process absentee ballots. Quote, this time we expect to break past records And so we're hiring more part-time temporary staff, and this will help us offset those costs, Reeder said. The money also could provide poll workers with hazard pay and for outreach to voters. It also will help pay for a $2,000 drop box for absentee ballots. The box will be installed by mailboxes near the entrance of the courthouse, 316 East 5th Street, facing Lafayette Street. The box will be in view of a security camera. It will be locked and bolted to the concrete. The organization that awarded the grant, Center for Tech and Civil Life, aims to provide resources that promote civic engagement. The program is meant to bolster voter education, poll worker training, early voting, and vote-by-mail options. The money can be used for election expenses from June 15 through December 31st. Black Hawk County was chosen for the grant due to its number of active registered voters, number of full-time election staff, and election office budget, among other factors. Quote, because of the pandemic and the increased interest in absentee voting, we've had to put on more staff, buy more supplies. We've had unexpected expenses, Reeder said, and nobody likes to exceed their budget, especially when you're dealing with taxpayers' money, unquote. The county must provide a report to the Center for Tech and Civic Life by January 31st. Hawkeye Community College reports weekly COVID-19 cases, filed by Andrew Wind. Waterloo, 17 Hawkeye Community College students and staff members reported last week that they had tested positive for COVID-19. The college posts weekly updates on those who self-report positive and presumed positive tests through an online dashboard. For September 7 through 13, 16 of the people were students and one was a Hawkeye employee. The dashboard notes the student number is 0.43% of HCC's 3,655 enrollment, and the employee represents 0.13% of its 729 staff. Since August 24th, a total of 62 students and staff have reported a positive test. That includes 55 students and 7 employees. The State Health Department reported 12 people died in the past 24 hours as of 10 a.m. Tuesday, and there were 508 new confirmed coronavirus cases. Iowa now has more than 75,000 confirmed coronavirus cases and has seen 1,233 deaths since March. Dunkerton City Procedures addressed by State Auditor, filed by Kristen Guess. Dunkerton, an independent examination of the city's handling of finances, warranted a slap on the wrist from State Auditor Rob Sand. A report released August 28th shows the auditor's office investigated Dunkerton's policies and procedures from July 1st, 2017 through June 30th, 2019, after receiving a citizen's petition. Mayor Michael Sharis downplayed the report. There's really not that much that they actually found, he said. The examination was performed at the request of nearly 100 petitioners in Dunkerton, according to Sharis. The report recommends the city spread out accounting duties to more people for better fraud protection, while stating the auditor is aware segregation of duties is difficult with a limited number of employees. Sharis, in his non-consecutive 23rd year of being mayor to the city of less than 1,000 residents, said this claim is common. Quote, that is one of the things in every audit that has to be done, he said. In a small town like this, you can't have enough people in place, unquote. Sharis said the city does it the best it can, noting 4 to 5 people oversee any bill before it goes to city council. The report also showed the city had no formal credit card policy, a claim shares disputes. Quote, I've been the mayor in the past, and we did have a credit card policy, he said. But Sharis said the council has adopted an updated formal written policy regulating the use of the city's credit cards. A closed city council session March 11, 2019, also raised a flag. Minutes from the open meeting show The session began at 7 p.m. in the council chambers. However, the minutes note the council went into closed session twice that night without stating why, which is against Iowa code. Sheriff, who took over as mayor in November 2019, said he has opened the city's lines of communication. Greenfield calls on Ernst to apologize to healthcare workers, filed by James Lynch of the Gazette's Des Moines Bureau. Teresa Greenfield is, quote, hot under the collar, unquote, about remarks her opponent, Republican U.S. Senator Joni Ernst, made 2 weeks ago about healthcare workers inflating the numbers of COVID-19 cases. Quote, I'm upset, frankly. I'm ticked off, she told reporters Tuesday. Rather than supporting healthcare workers, Ernst has been attacking them and attacking the healthcare that so many Iowans rely on. Nobody grandstands like Greenfield, who opposed coronavirus relief measures approved by congressional Democrats and Republicans, the Ernst campaign responded. Greenfield was referring to a comment Ernst made in Blackhawk County on August 31st when responding to a person who said COVID-19 deaths were being exaggerated. Ernst said she too was skeptical of the numbers. Since then, Ernst apologized to medical workers for her comment on a call with the Iowa Medical Society. That's not enough for Greenfield, a Des Moines real estate executive who is in a competitive race to replace Ernst. Most polling has shown the race to be within the margin of error. Quote, Senator Ernst, I'm calling on you today to publicly apologize to our doctors, our nurses, our healthcare workers, our hospitals, Greenfield said. Quote, those folks are heroes, and they're putting their lives on the line to keep us healthy and safe during the pandemic. It's Greenfield's support for healthcare workers that should be questioned, according to the Ernst campaign. Quote, when it comes to helping doctors, nurses, and frontline workers, Greenfield opposes the Democrat-led HEROES Act, opposes the Republican-led COVID relief bill, and calls the Bipartisan CARES Act a slush fund, said Ernst campaign spokeswoman Melissa Dietsch. But Greenfield's campaign said she opposed an early version of the CARES Act that would have bailed out Republicans' corporate donors. It failed. Greenfield was critical of the GOP COVID-19 bill because it didn't do enough. She also said she would have voted against a Democratic plan. Asked whether she would have confidence in a COVID-19 vaccine approved by the Food and Drug Administration, Greenfield said she would follow the advice of public health officials. If a vaccine becomes available, she said, it should be free and accessible to as many people as possible. Quote, it's really important that we roll it out in a way that protects the most vulnerable, protects our essential workers, and starts to get that coverage where we need it first and foremost, Greenfield said. You are listening to the recording of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Wednesday, September 16th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Thomas Marion Thompson, 82, of Cedar Falls, passed away at the Cedar Valley Hospice Home on Tuesday, September 15, 2020. He was born in Waterloo on March 7, 1938, son of Jasper and Letha Thompson. Tom was a graduate of East High School with the class of 1956. He was married to Kathy Jean Huggins on July 16, 1960, at Grace Lutheran Church in Waterloo, where they had met in Walter League. Tom worked a short while for the railroad, then worked at John Deere for 37 years as a tool and die maker until his retirement in 1995. He was an avid volunteer for the Boy Scouts as a scout leader and camp board member. Tom's memorial service will be held on Thursday, September 17, 2020, at 11 a.m. at Ascension Lutheran Church of Waterloo, with an hour of visitation beginning at 10. Attendees are asked to bring and wear a mask. Memorials may be directed to Cedar Valley Hospice, and condolences may be left at www.dahlfuneralhome.com. Randy Marvin Anderson, age 63, of Waterloo, died September 13, 2020, after a long battle with dementia. He was born on November 19, 1956, in Waterloo, the son of Marvin and Joyce Anderson. He graduated from Southeast Polk High School in 1976. On August 1, 1981, he married Rosie Wirtz at the Little Brown Church in Nashua. Randy worked as a plumber and pipe fitter with Viking Pump for 33 years, retiring in 2012. Visitation will be held at Prairie Lakes Church, Cedar Falls, on Saturday, September 19th, from 2 to 3 p.m., with a celebration of life service following. All are welcome to attend and celebrate Randy's life. Online guestbook at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. Thomas Tom E. Dolan, 73, of New Albion, Iowa, formerly of Waterloo, Iowa, died Monday, September 14, 2020, at his home in New Albion. Funeral services will be held Thursday, September 17th, at 11 a.m. at St. Joseph Catholic Church in New Albion, with Father Sean Smith officiating. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Friends may call from 9:30 a.m. until time of services Thursday at the church. Martin Grau Funeral Home in Waukon, Iowa, is handling the arrangements. In consideration of concerns regarding COVID-19, social distancing and wearing of masks is encouraged. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Winneshiek Medical Center Hospice or New Albion Fire Department and Rescue. Thomas Edward Dolan was born May 3, 1947 in Waterloo, Iowa, the son of Thomas Wayne and Mayburn Ruth Dolan. He was baptized and confirmed at St. Mary's Catholic Church and graduated from Columbus High School in 1965, both in Waterloo. Tom started working with his father at Tom Dolan Concrete and Masonry at Waterloo until he took over the business in 1973. In 1990, he moved to New Albion, Iowa. On December 8, 1990, he married Margaret Meg Louise Strub at the Little Brown Church in Nashua, Iowa. Tom worked for several contractors in the New Albion area until he retired in 2002. An avid outdoorsman, he loved hunting, fishing, and spending time in the outside. Online condolences may be left at www.martinfunerals.com. Darren M. Headington, 54, of Hudson, died Friday, September 11, 2020, at his home. He was born August 8, 1966, in Waterloo to Dwayne Bud E. and LaVon Bonnie McKernan Headington. He graduated from Hudson High School in 1984 and later attended UNI. He owned and operated Dad's Pub in Waterloo. There will be gatherings of friends and family from 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock p.m. Thursday, September 17th at Dad's Pub, 1106 LaPorte Road, Waterloo. Frances Elizabeth Altman, 96, of Cedar Falls, passed away on Sunday, September 13th, 2020 at New Aldea Lifescapes. She was born in Sioux City on June 12, 1924, daughter of Albert and Catherine Holmvik. Frances met Reiner Altman when she was working for a farm family and the couple married January 28, 1942 in Parkersburg. She was a devoted wife and mother who worked alongside her husband through the years on their farm. Due to COVID-19, Frances's family will have a private service with burial at Lincoln Township Cemetery near Dyke. Memorials may be directed to the family, and condolences may be left at www.dollfuneralhome.com. Frances had a green thumb and could grow anything. She enjoyed feeding the birds, especially goldfinches. Frances was an excellent cook and baker. Most of all, she loved her family and cherished spending time with them all. Ruby June Hebner, 91, of Nevada, formerly of Redland, died Saturday, March 21, 2020, at Rolling Green Village in Nevada. Ruby was born June 11, 1928, in Sumner, Iowa, the daughter of Robert and Louise Ochbrenner. She graduated from Sumner High School and Concordia Lutheran College. Ruby was united in marriage to Marvin Edward Hubner on June 13, 1948, at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Klinger, Iowa. Ruby taught school at Klinger and farmed with Marvin. She also operated R&V Cafe in Redland and ran her own beauty shop for several years. Ruby was a devoted member of Emmanuel Lutheran Church. She also enjoyed being a part of the Fabulous Five with her close friends. In her spare time, she enjoyed ceramics, baking, cooking, traveling, and spending time with her grandchildren. Memorial contributions may be made to Emmanuel Lutheran Church and school in memory of Ruby. Memorials may be sent to Rasmussen Ryan Funeral Home, attention Ruby Hebner family, 1418 Fawcett Parkway, Nevada, Iowa, 50201. A memorial service will be 10:30 a.m. Saturday, September 26, at the Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Klinger, Iowa. Face masks are required at the service. The service will be live-streamed on the ILC Klinger Facebook page. Burial will follow at the church cemetery. Rasmussen Ryan Funeral Home in Nevada is handling arrangements. Condolences may be sent to the family at www.rasmussenfh.com. Ronald Ron Esch, 72, of Waterloo, died Sunday, September 13th, at his home, surrounded by family. Funeral services are at 10:30 a.m. Friday, September 18th, with visitation for an hour before services at Kern's Funeral Service, Kimball Chapel. Memorials to the family. Visit www.kernsfuneralservice.com for more information. At the family's request, masks are required and dress casually. Anna Marie Morse, 85, died September 10th, 2020, in Waterloo, Iowa. Iowa Cremation is handling the arrangements. Let's turn now to the sports page. Big Ten crawls closer to a restart. At this point, it appears to be more a matter of when Big Ten football teams will start a delayed season rather than if there would be a season at all. The conference has made no official announcement about what Big Ten presidents and chancellors have decided to do about restarting a season they put on hold during early August, but it has approved assembling a revised football schedule that could see a season kick off as early as October 17th. By starting the season that weekend, or even 1 week later on October 24th, enough time would remain on the calendar for Big Ten teams to plan an 8-game conference-only schedule and hold a Big Ten championship game on December 19th, one day before the College Football Playoff Committee announces its 4-team field. The 8-game schedule would include 4 home games and 4 road games for each team and return some sense of normalcy to a season sidelined by concerns over the COVID-19 pandemic. If the season started on October 17th, that would allow each team to even have one bye week on schedules that would include games against 6 divisional opponents and 2 opponents from the opposite division. An October 24th start would eliminate the bye week for all teams. While some uncertainty remains, Big Ten programs are preparing for a mid-October start to the season. Iowa posted multiple photos of Hawkeye players working out in the weight room on Tuesday under the heading, "Stay Ready So You Don't Gotta Get Ready," unquote. University of Nebraska President Ted Carter provided more than a hint of possibility of plans for a season moving forward when comments he made prior to a news conference in Lincoln were caught on a hot mic. Quote, "We're getting ready to announce the Huskers in Big Ten football tonight," unquote, Carter said in a conversation with Bob Hinson, director of the National Strategic Research Institute, that was picked up by a microphone prior to the event. Asked about it following the event, Carter said his comments were taken out of context and added that Nebraska remains, quote, "cautiously optimistic," unquote, about the prospects for a season starting in a matter of weeks and not the months initially anticipated when the Big Ten scrapped plans for fall sports because of the coronavirus. During the same morning Carter spoke, Wisconsin Chancellor Rebecca Blank told a U.S. Senate committee that Big Ten continued to wait for answers to medical concerns before making any announcement regarding the 2020 season. She said the, quote, "we'll keep our season postponed," unquote, until answers to those concerns could be provided. Speaking to the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee at a hearing to discuss name, image, and likeness legislation that would allow compensation for collegiate athletes, Blank was asked by Senator Tim Kaine, Democrat of West Virginia, if there would be a vote among campus leaders this week to start the season. Quote, "decisions within the Big Ten are largely majority-based decisions, but I'll be honest, we almost always decide everything by consensus," Blank said. "We very rarely take votes." She declined to say whether presidents and chancellors from the 14 schools had reached a consensus. Blank on Monday said a variety of things have changed since the group made its initial decision, including the availability of accurate rapid testing for the coronavirus. She indicated Big Ten presidents and chancellors had a very good discussion on a weekend as football teams from Atlantic Coast and Big 12 conferences started their season. Blank indicated that if the Big Ten decides to return to the field soon, it would do so collectively. Quote, "we're all going to play or not," she said. "This isn't going to be a school-by-school thing," unquote. The Big Ten is one of four football bowl subdivision conferences which originally announced plans to postpone the season until spring. The Pac-12, Mid-American, and Mountain West conferences have also delayed the start of their seasons. The other three Power Five conferences, the ACC, Big 12, and Southeastern, all expect their teams to play this fall. In prep volleyball, number 2 Dyke New Hartford sweeps number 8 Denver, filed by Craig Skeezer, sports correspondent. And the story opens up with girls at the volleyball net with the caption, "Denver's Allison Bonnet left and Anna Curtis try to block a shot by Dyke New Hartford's Ellery Knock on Tuesday." Dyke. The Dyke New Hartford volleyball team has played one of the state's most challenging schedules, and it showed Tuesday night. The Class 2A number 2 Wolverines bolted to a blazing start before sweeping number 8 Denver in a battle of North Iowa Cedar rivals. Dyke New Hartford powered to identical 25-11 wins in the first two sets before rallying for a 25-21 victory in set 3. The Wolverines improved to 13-2 overall, while the Cyclones fell to 13-2. "Denver is an exceptional team," Dyke New Hartford coach Diane Harm said. Quote, "they have a lot of good weapons. We knew we had to be ready to play and get after it. Our girls did a good job of staying aggressive with our serves and our swings. Denver is having a terrific season, and we knew they were going to battle us. We knew it wasn't going to be easy," unquote. Denver New Hartford freshman Jaden Peterson set the tone early with an array of booming spikes. Dyke New Hartford scored 9 straight points on her serve to take a commanding 9-1 lead. "Jaden did a great job serving," Harm said. "She was on all night with her serve, and that was a big key for us. Her serve was very effective. She also played well in the front row. She gave us a big spark," unquote. Jaden Peterson played a superb overall floor game and finished with 10 kills. Quote, "there are some really good teams out there, and playing a tough schedule has helped us a lot," Peterson said. "Denver has a great team, and they were a tough opponent. We've made a lot of improvements, and we just keep getting better," unquote. Peterson's twin sister, Peyton, dominated again at the net. She delivered with a pair of emphatic spikes and a pair of blocks during her team's early run. She finished with 13 kills. Wolverine junior Ryan Shoemaker finished the first game with a spike. Dyke New Hartford led just 8-6 in the second set against the scrappy Cyclones before eventually pulling away. The Peterson twins continued to excel while junior Taylor Holmes connected on a pair of spikes. Sophomore Ellery Nock finished the second game with a spike. Visiting Denver came back determined in the third set, leading for much of the way. The Cyclones went up 19-8 on a tip by Reese Johnson before the Wolverines rallied. Dyke New Hartford regained the lead for good when Peyton Peterson hammered a spike that Denver couldn't handle. The Wolverines led 20-19 before closing out the match. Dyke New Hartford did a superb job blocking Denver's powerful hitting tandem of Kayla Knowles and Allison Bonnet. The Cyclones finally started clicking on offense in the final set. "We didn't perform as well as we were hoping," Denver coach Jamie Johnson said. Quote, "Dyke is just a great team, and they run an up-tempo offense. We obviously didn't get off to a great start, and that really hurt us. We needed to pass better and run our offense better. Our serve-receive needs to be strong so we can run our offense and put our opponent on their heels," unquote. Johnson was encouraged with the improvement her team made in the final set. Quote, "We didn't really start playing like we are capable until game three," she said. "We were hoping to perform more consistently. This was a good test for us. We have to learn from this and learn to hang with the state-caliber teams." Wolverine sophomore center Madeline Norton was all over the court, collecting 36 assists. Playing a difficult schedule is paying off already for Dyke New Hartford. Quote, "We've really been tested against some great teams," Harm said. "Every time we play somebody, they have a different strength, and you try to adjust to that. We've made some good progress. We have a young team, and we're learning a lot," unquote. In the Prep of the Week column, another Beatty at running back and Independence, filed by Jim Nelson. Independence. The Independence football team's slogan for the 2020 season is, quote, "Embrace the challenge," unquote. That motto could be tweaked for junior running back Marcus Beatty to embrace the name. The name Beatty and Mustang football go hand in hand. His father, Bobby, held the school single-season rushing record until 3 years ago, a mark that had stood for 30 years and also for a time served as Indy's head football coach. Uncle Justin also was a standout running back for the Mustangs, and both Bobby and Justin went on to impressive careers at Wartburg College. After playing a big role on the state playoff qualifying team last year as a sophomore, Beatty said his dad and uncle had just one message for him entering this season, as it was anticipated he'd be the focal point of the Mustangs' event offense. Quote, "My uncle and dad always told me to be myself," unquote, Beatty said. With a commitment to continually bettering himself, the current Beatty looks a lot like the previous models on the field. Through three games, Beatty has rushed for 515 yards and six scores, has caught four passes for 97 yards and two more scores, while defensively, he is second in tackles while helping the Mustangs to a 2-1 start. In a victory over Olwine last week in the Battle of Highway 150, Beatty rushed for three touchdowns and caught a scoring pass in less than optimal conditions as it rained from start to finish. Quote, "You can tell he comes from a family of football players and is the son of a football coach," Independence head coach Justin Putz said. Quote, "But I think the biggest thing is it goes back to his work ethic. He is the hardest worker we have. He is intelligent. He is always there, is strong, and is committed," unquote. After suffering huge losses to graduation from its 9-1 squad in 2019, a lot of weight was placed on Beatty's shoulders to carry a team Putz calls the youngest he's ever coached. Quote, "We knew Marcus was good player, and he was a good player for us last year," Putz said. "He was our only returning starter. So not only did we expect big things, we needed big things out of him. And he has performed even better than what we thought he would." Using the 5'9", 200-pound Beatty's speed to their advantage, Putz and his offensive staff will try to get him the ball in space as much as possible. "I do think I have good ability to make people miss in space, Beatty said. I also feel like I'm faster than most of my competition, unquote. The biggest key to Beatty's success, both he and Putz agree, is he is a multi-sport athlete. Beatty was a member of the Mustangs state dual qualifying wrestling team last season. He ran at the state track meet as a freshman, and this summer he was a starting shortstop for Indy's baseball team, earning third-team All-State honors after batting 515. Does being a multi-sport athlete help? Quote, I think so. You are using different muscles in different ways. In wrestling and baseball, you have to be so mentally tough for those sports. Track makes you faster. I think every sport helps in a different way, unquote. Putz says playing multiple sports helps Beatty in another way, too. Quote, I think it helps him a ton because he has played varsity in something else, Putz adds. So when he's out there on the field, that isn't the first big moment he's been in, unquote. When not on the field, Beatty volunteers at the school and serves as a tutor. Already being recruited for both baseball and football, Beatty is not certain what direction he will go in college. Quote, I don't know yet. Between football and baseball, Beatty said. Quote, that will be a tough decision. If a school would allow me to do both, I'd be in for that, unquote. Let's go back and pick up some more local information from the Cedar Valley section. Under Metro Briefs, Waverly Vets to hold Fish Fry, Waverly. The Waverly Area Veterans Post will have a fish fry from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday. Carry out and curbside orders will be available. Inside dining downstairs will be from 5:45 till 7 p.m. Call in reservations by 5 p.m. Thursday at this phone number, area code 319-483-9287, or go to www.waverlyvets.us to order. Bremer County awarded grant. The Bremer County Sheriff's Office was awarded a grant from the Governor's Traffic Safety Bureau for the Special Traffic Enforcement Program. This allows the Sheriff's Office to apply for funding for equipment to be used by the deputies at minimal charge to citizens. CVHS meetings canceled for now. Waterloo. Meetings of the Cedar Valley Historical Society have been canceled temporarily. They will resume when the board decides it's safe to do so. Normally, the group meets 7 p.m. on the fourth Tuesday of each month from September through May at the Grout Museum. For more information, call Craig Bevender at 296-3019. Visiting Nurses offers flu shots, Waterloo. The Waterloo Visiting Nurses Association will hold walk-in flu shot clinics from 2 to 4 p.m. Tuesdays, 10 a.m. to noon Thursdays, and 1 to 3 p.m. Fridays at 2530 University Avenue. Anyone can drop in when convenient. Please bring current insurance cards. The VNA is able to process traditional Medicare, United Healthcare Medicare Advantage, and Humana Medicare Advantage. The VNA can also file claims with Wellmark, Blue Cross, and Blue Shield. The VNA will follow CDC recommended guidelines for social distancing and limited exposure by dedicating one room to flu vaccinations only. All persons are asked to wear a mask. The VNA is offering high-dose flu immunizations for persons over the age of 65 and the quadrivalent for those under 65 years of age. Water means to be flushed, Waterloo. The Waterloo Water Works will flush water mains Thursday in the area of West San Marnin Drive to West 4th Street and from West 4th to Annsboro Avenue. Customers may experience discoloration and are urged not to plan a wash day Thursday. Waverly Lions serve pancakes. Waverly. The Waverly Lions Club will have a drive-up pancake breakfast available from 7:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Sunday. For more information, call 269-0781. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Wednesday, September 16th. I'm your reader, Bob. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org at any time. Please stay safe, and thank you for listening today.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date.
Since the dawn of humankind, people have used caves to explore, hold religious ceremonies, create art, or avoid the dangers of weather and predators. Partly because of that, they continue to fascinate scientists today. To create a cave, Mother Nature needs three things: water, rock that can be dissolved by it, and lots of time. Rainwater, as it falls through the atmosphere, picks up carbon from CO2 to become a weak carbonic acid. By the time it hits Earth, it's about as acidic as coffee. As it percolates through the soil, it picks up more carbon from decaying plants, becoming a slightly stronger acid. If the rock below the soil is limestone, gypsum, or dolomite, the water can dissolve along tiny cracks. Over many thousands of years, the cracks become channels, then tunnels, and could eventually become caverns. Water might also mix with hydrogen sulfide gas seeping up from natural oil and gas deposits to form sulfuric acid, which can also dissolve the rock. Protected from daily and seasonal changes on the surface, caves can maintain a stable temperature and humidity. In these delicate environments, the remains of ancient animals and humans, which could have quickly decayed on the surface, have been preserved for millennia. Deeper, more isolated caves have preserved bacteria and microbes undisturbed for millions of years. These qualities make caves important sites for researchers, natural time capsules. There's probably an amazing cave near you, so take a trip and get to know your Earth. I'm Scott Tinker, dissolving mysteries on Earth Date.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.